right. All righty. All right. So we already got some people here waiting for it. That's exciting, right? You guys are excited. I'm excited. I'm excited to host a show again. For anyone who doesn't know, my name is Steve. This show is called Freight Broker Live. It is the one and only talk show where we talk about what it's like to actually work in the industry, whether you're a freight broker, driver, carrier, ship, warehouseman, loading trucks, taking your sweet time, whatever the case may be is, that's what we talk about. I've been in the industry for 15 years. I started Freight Broker Live as kind of, you know, I started doing this. I started with an open call-in show without all the fancy cameras and lighting, all that stuff. But I started because I wanted to just give some insight. I was tired of listening to people complain all the time. So that's, you know, I started making these videos and kept going. And then I started writing and all that stuff. So there's a lot of cool stuff that goes into it. So let me start the music for my intro, and then we'll go from there. Music was very loud in my ears today. Couldn't even hear myself singing. Anyway, today is February 19th. It is 2:01 on the East Coast, like 1 o'clock Central Time. Who cares what time it is in California? Because it is California, right? Who cares? Anyway, let me find the camera that I want, which is this one. All right. Let me turn off. So I'm going to give some updates. I've got some new news, and I didn't write an article yet. So if any of you other media people are picking this up, make sure you cite me because I'm coming after you if you don't. So remember that truck stop shooting? We covered it a little bit yesterday in our show. Well, there's been some more details. I'm waiting on a call. I'm supposed to get a call from somebody that witnesses whole thing. But basically, the reporting that I've seen on it has been very limited on what actually happened. There's been no knowledge of what actually caused this driver to get shot. And we're working on verifying it, but it looks like there is an independent driver who's not, you know, he wasn't connected. He just happened to be there that witnessed this whole thing. And they are, I'm waiting to confirm it, but I'm going to read this. This is what his dispatcher wrote online. And I'm waiting to confirm with the driver. I've also got calls into the district attorney and the media the PIO that I've already spoken to. I sent an email trying to get them to confirm this story. But it looks like what happened is this truck driver parked in a reserve spot. We all know reserve parking is BS anyway. But unfortunately, a lot of these truck stops are trying to maximize their profitability. And for whatever reason, someone thought it would be a good idea to try to sell these parking spots. Anyway, so around 4:35 in the morning, a security guard notices a truck is parked in a reserved parking spot. He checks the truck hadn't paid, so he goes and knocks on the door, wakes up the truck driver. Truck driver actually comes out and says, blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm not moving my truck. I can't move it. Whatever he said because of ELD, whatever. I don't know. I just made that up. But he just said, I'm not moving it. He actually gets back in the truck and goes to sleep. So rather than the security guard doing what he's supposed to and calling the police at that point or doing something, he gets out of or he gets back in his little security guard, you know, pickup truck and lays on the horn. Granted, this is 4:30 in the morning. So he just lays on his horn, according to drivers that were there. Just lays on the horn. So the driver eventually gets pretty annoyed by it, probably because he's like, hey, listen, you're going to impact all the other people that are trying to sleep right now. So the driver gets out. They get into a fight. The security guard apparently realizes, hey, he's getting his butt whooped. So he pulls out a weapon and shoots the guy. It doesn't make any sense. No matter what, I mean, like I said yesterday, as someone that used to work security, if they don't have a gun, I'm certainly not pulling one. And don't pick a fight that you can't win. That's kind of my rationale. I'm waiting on the police to confirm this. I'm waiting on the DA to say if they're pressing charges against the security guard or the driver, for that matter, because you never know with how things go now. They may be trying to press charges against the driver. Who knows what the circumstances are? But I can honestly say, if I find out who the security company is, I'm putting them on blast because they need to properly train. I'm going to do an in-depth investigation into their license and any other officer-related shootings. I'm going to look up everything. Because one, as someone that's worked armed security before, this was not right. Under no circumstances was this right, that you have to use lethal force by shooting a driver in the chest because he's in a freaking parking spot. And I love TA's statement. TA came out and gave a statement and said, we're working with police and we're doing all this. And but they didn't say anything specific about whether or not the security guard was justified. Of course, they can't say that because you know what's going to end up happening. It's not going to be justified. They're most likely going to charge the security guard. This is what I think. This is hypothetical, but I think they'll most likely charge the security guard. The security guard will be charged. The driver's going to do everything in their power to get a huge paycheck, and he best damn get it, because we get people that are, you know, breaking their ankle and getting $8 million because they were hit by a truck they weren't even hit by the truck. They were hit by a cone that the truck accidentally hit, and then they go off and crash because they don't know how to ride a motorcycle. Anyway, but that guy, that's an article I wrote a couple of months back, but that guy ended up getting $8 million, and he just had a busted ankle off of it. So who knows what will happen with this driver? I just hope, the last we heard is he's in stable condition, so who knows what actually happens. But, of course, you guys see right there, this show and all shows for the month of February are sponsored by Insurance Unlimited. Now, you may say, who the hell is Insurance Unlimited? Well, Insurance Unlimited is the number one referred logistics insurance company. Well, they actually work in all modes of insurance and all products and all whatever the tech is. But they specialize in commercial auto liability, cargo, umbrellas, general liability, brokers, contingent liability, unladen, full laden, I don't know, everything else, every other type of insurance you guys could need. Now, no matter where you're watching this, in the comments down below, it's got their web address. Go fill it out. Call them if you're up for a renewal. They will give you, you know, a good price. If you like my show, you're going to like them. They're going to put you in touch with someone named Brittany. Brittany is the insurance agent. She's also the director of trucking insurance. And she'll treat you well. She's a good agent. She knows what she's doing, and she won't BS you just like a lot of people do in the industry. But that's it. You know, I had my new little video that I had this morning that I put out, which is 5 minutes of freight news or something, but it ended up lasting 6.5 minutes, whatever. But you guys should check that out, because I talk a little bit about the Amazon layoffs, because an Amazon contractor is now laid off an additional 95 people, it brings the total up to like 7,100 people that are going to be laid off from now until the end of April. It's insane. And I've learned a little bit more about it. So a lot of these drivers are going to be easily picked up by other companies, but still, it just doesn't seem right, and I don't know how they can get away with doing it, but whatever. The cool thing is the Bloomberg writer, the writer who wrote the article in Bloomberg actually tweeted me and said, hey, look how in-depth this guy went into his research. So that was pretty cool, considering I'm just like a stay-at-home journalist. Anyway, let's see what some of these comments are, and then I'll throw up the phone line. As always, you guys can go to my website, which is here. Check it out. I've got all sorts of news. I've got all sorts of content. I built this website myself. I'm not a real big tech guy. So go ahead and check it out. Like it, subscribe. You'll see a little bell that's like under my face, which you can't see in the actual video. But there's a little red bell, and you could subscribe to notifications. Then you'll get a push notification when I go live, something like that. Depending on if I think it's going to be a good show, I put it up. But yeah. So let's put it back on this camera. Let's read some of these comments, and then we will just jump into the call-in show. All right, so C. Walker on YouTube said, good show yesterday. I hope today's show is even better. Well, that's one of the reasons why I opened it up for a call-in show 2 days in a row, because I didn't, you know, I needed to end it so I could go to the gym. But it was a good show. There was a lot of good information. A lot of people were very receptive of the show, and I like that. And that's why I do these shows. That's why I make all these videos and spend all my time doing this shit, because I like it, and I think people could benefit from it. One way or the other. Sorry, I just ate right before this. I've got indigestion. All right. So there's a bunch of conversations back and forth. On YouTube, Roman Britschko said he came across another broker that doesn't pay jack. Countrywide Transportation out of Hinsdale, Illinois. They don't pay truck order not used, detention, layover, no accessorial charges whatsoever. Well, here's a simple solution to that. Don't haul for them. And that's from their Raycon. That's stupid. Javier, well, I don't know how you say your name. This dude right here said he called them to get contingent cargo insurance quote. I sent the paperwork. They asked, but they never called me back. Well, Brittany, watch this. Call Javier Sanchez back. Or just call her again. Call again and ask to speak to Brittany, and she'll help you. Leave a message. Send her an email if you want. It's bsmith@insunlimited.com. She'll be able to help you. Lamel said, do we have to call to ask a question? Clearly not. I'm reading the chat. So you could just type it in chat and I'll go through. Chuck Ulrich said, I've been reading second half of 2020, but I think it will be after the election. I don't know what you're talking about here, buddy, unless you're having a conversation. Sub Facebook Live, that 5 minute segment is spot on. But all right. So yeah, I don't know what you guys are talking about. All right, so here's a call in line. Guys, please just try to keep it. We're all adults. It makes it a pain in the butt if I got to keep censoring out every single call. Just try to be, ask real questions if you got them. You just want to talk about the industry, talk about how it's bad. I don't really care if you swear. Just keep down the level of BS if you can. That would be nice. So I guess I'm going to start the conversation off with automation, because I think automation's kind of... it's something we hear about. I think it's funny because a lot of the other people that write and cover the logistics space from the media aspect, they focus on the automation, they focus on freight tech, and they focus on like what's going to happen. In terms of automating trucks, I'm not even talking about that because I don't think that's going to happen anytime in my life or anytime in my kids' life until maybe they're super old. I don't think we're going to see automated trucks running all over the road. There was an article now that one company is using automated yard jockeys. I mean, it's cool. They do it at the Long Island port, I think. And there's one port in China that's fully automated. One of the viewers said last week, I think I have no problem with automating some aspects of the industry, as long as it can make it so it's a much better, as long as it helps, you know, in terms of automating freight brokerages and digital marketplaces. I will say this with certainty right now. I have tried almost all the Book It Now functionality that I've seen. It doesn't matter who is the provider of it. Almost all the Book It Now functionality is not very good. And it's not because of effort. It's because of the rates. That's the problem. It's actually going to drive carriers away from the Book It Now functionality, because they're going to get in there and it's just the lowest rates, and brokers are trying to make as much money as they can. I am for, that kind of automation, that logistics process and automating that system. But it just seems like a lot of people look at it differently. But let me see. Lamel Brooks on Facebook said, I'm about to go owner operator and buy a truck. Is this a good time to do it? let's say it this way. I've always said I'll never own any trucks or anything ever again. I'm looking at trucks. So yeah, I think it's a okay time to get involved in the industry, as long as you have the education and the knowledge to actually back it up. You know, depends how much you pay for the truck. It depends what kind of insurance rate. If you're in an area like Southern Florida where insurance is through the roof, then maybe not, because your costs to operate are going to be high. You're going to have to return to Southern Florida, you know, as often as you want to get home. You know, it kind of all depends on all those factors. Do I, Even when freight rates are bad, I don't necessarily think it's a bad time to get into the industry. I think you just need to know what you're doing. You can't just be like one day, wake up and stretch out and go, oh, I'm going to become a trucker, because it doesn't actually work that way. You actually have to know what you're doing. And a lot of people did that, especially in the end of 2018, even early in 2019. That's what they did. They heard, oh, my buddy's making a bunch of money, so I'm going to go out and become a super trucker myself. And it doesn't actually work. It's hard work. Driving is hard. Being a broker, like I always said, I got some flack from that yesterday. Being a broker is not exactly hard. Once you get the customers and you learn what you're doing, it's not that hard to actually be a broker. It's actually pretty easy. It's tedious and it's boring as hell, but you make decent money, which is why I do it. Tony on Facebook said, how is the broker market? Is everybody busy or slow? No, we're slow as hell right now. Freight's starting to come back. That's how I think that 2020 is actually going to be a good year, because having done this for, 12 years now as a broker or in some aspect of brokerage, I can tell that if freight volumes are already starting to come up and we're starting to have high load to truck ratios and things like that, I think it's going to be good, especially if we can knock out some more of these little trucking companies and brokers that don't necessarily have any business being in the industry. But I think a lot of people get into the industry with the lack of education. Those are the people that you blame for low rates. And that goes on both sides. That's brokers and carriers. But yeah, we're slow. On the broker side, we're slow. The actual amount, the volume that we move daily is not what it's supposed to be. We should be moving a lot more freight right now. But the volumes are up. But in compared to what we do in the summer seasons when freight is really, really busy for us, because we're almost like a seasonal broker, it's slow. It hurts. I mean, this is one of the slower. I'm not going to tell you how much I made this week, but I got it. And I was like, it's not enough money, but Nashi Tashashi, however you say your name, I don't mean to butcher it. You guys can figure this one out. But that Mr. and Mrs. Eyeballs there said, how do I become a freight agent with no experience? Well, you don't. That's the best advice I can give you. One, you could try to take a course or something somewhere, but most of them are garbage. Hell, even the course that I take, I train people in, I tell them, like, you're not going to be prepared to go out and become a broker. And I was very forthright, and that's why the people that are in it will also, they'll attest to that, because I say, you're not going to be ready to become a broker by just taking some 6-week course. Hell, there's people that teach, trying to decide whether I may talk about one training program without mentioning it, but how they have this elaborate pyramid scheme, and then people will be able to connect the dot. And I say scheme because that's the only way to describe it. So maybe if we don't have very many callers, maybe I'll just go into that and why it's so bad. But the best way to answer your question, the best way to become a freight agent with no experience is to go work for a broker. So get a job. Don't try to become an agent. Don't listen to any of these people that are out like, oh, come take my 4-day course and bub, and we'll make you an agent. Don't do any of that stuff. Go work for one of the mega brokers. They'll teach you it. They'll teach you the job. They won't teach you how to do it correctly, but they'll teach you the job. So that way you could decide whether or not you want to work in it. Because a lot of people don't, I don't know. I would advise, is it a bad time to buy a truck? Man, probably not. You could still be profitable. Is it a bad time to be a broker to try to learn the business as a broker? Yeah, probably, because freight is down now, so everyone's feeling a crunch. That's why a lot of brokers and a lot of freight tech companies right now are cutting staffing. You see that. I've written articles on it. Other, companies have written on it. You could find independent newspapers that write on other stuff that some of us aren't allowed to write about. But there's all sorts of companies that are cutting employees. Trucking companies are laying off people because there's not enough freight. Freight is coming back. Volumes are coming back. The rates are kind of slow, but the rates are still higher than what they were last year. So it's interesting when you really think about it. Call in line is active, 914-803-4008. Here's just kind of this video stays up. So it stays up on YouTube, stays up on Facebook, it stays up on LinkedIn and all that stuff after. So if you're watching this and you try to call in and the phone line doesn't work, it's because you're watching it on a replay. There were quite a few comments yesterday where they're like, the phone system's not working. The phone. And I'm like, yeah, because you're watching at 10:30 at night. Anyway, Purs Mall, I don't know how you say your name either, on Facebook, you said the insurance rates are up because of high increasing number of accidents. Accidents rise because of hours of service and ELD and low rates. No, they don't. Anyway, oh boy. And low rates, where carriers and drivers are always fighting against the clock to make delivery and go to the next load to make some money in this bad market. No, that's not why accidents happen. Do you know why accidents happen? Accidents happen because people don't, they screw up behind the wheel. They're not screwing up. People aren't racing the clock. I hate that argument so much. Here's a disclaimer for the people that haven't watched my older videos. I absolutely hate, I detest the ELD from a driving standpoint. From a business owner standpoint, trucking fleet owner standpoint, it's awesome. I can track my drivers at all time. I can manage their paperwork. I can make sure they're doing everything they're supposed to. But actually using one and driving one, you know how many I smashed in a 3-day trip? I flew up to Buffalo to pick up, but to essentially repo one of my trucks when I still had trucks. Flew up to Buffalo, jumped in the truck, made it like 6 hours and screwed up on the ELD. Smashed it because I'm, you know, I get angry. And then I had to buy a new one. And I'm just resetting the logs the whole way. Ended up parking at a truck stop because I was in a, you know, a hot shot with a gooseneck trailer. Yeah, a big truck was driving around. I knew he needed a spot to park. So I just said, screw it. I can fit over in this corner where he can't. So I'll move out. You know, we made eye contact. He knew I was moving out for him. Of course, I go to park. I fall back asleep. I wake up the next morning and my clock had reset because of that little time I drove. So again, I did what a normal logical person would do and I smashed the second ELD. I'm not a fan of driving while under ELDs. But again, ELDs are not the reason why people race the clock. People race the clock, one, because of what Mead Swingley said on Facebook is improper training. Secondly, it's because of traffic and issues like that. And third, it's because of really crappy hours of service. The hours of service aren't enough. But the problem is you can't fix it because there's still people that are getting violations and causing accidents and doing stuff even with, you know, the hours that they are now. The insurance rates are high because of accidents, you're right. But they're not, they're high because of claims. It doesn't matter whether it's an accident or not. But it has nothing to do with ELDs. It has to do with hours of service, because with ELDs, an enforcement tool for the hours of service. Hours of service need to be fixed. Do I have any solution to try to fix them? Absolutely not. Why? One, because I haven't been driving in quite a while. And secondly, because I don't care. Have people that have the drivers actually figure out what times and hours would work better for them. But we have a caller. Let's see if this is a legit one. Hey, what's up, buddy? You're on the air.
Hello, sir. Hey, sir. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing great. I had a question for you about insurance rates. I would be curious to find out if the per capita rate has increased. Or is it just the number of accidents rate? You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
20 years ago, there was less trucks and less cars on the road. Has the rate of accidents actually increased? Or is it just more accidents because there's more trucks?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I think it also has to do with experience, though. So, I mean, if you look like, you know, states like Texas, I don't know. I don't know the numbers to back that up. I will look into it, though. That's a really good question.
And then I had a little insight onto the Amazon day cats.
Yeah.
Remember we have all those ghost day cats sitting around?
Yeah.
Well, I have a friend that's a manager of a warehouse, and Amazon sent, 3 years ago, they sent out people to get their CDL through the megas.
Uh-huh.
And they're just now getting to where they have that 3-year mark. So they're going to be easier on insurance. And now they're going to start pulling those guys back and put them in at $22.50 an hour.
Really?
It's what they're going to be hitting the day caps to do some of their local driving. Yes, sir.
So they'll be Amazon direct hires, not through like a franchise program or anything like that.
correct. It wouldn't be a franchise hire. It's just like they're doing their vans as a franchisee. They're going to do the same thing with their day cabs.
Really?
The franchisees, they'll have the trucks, and they're buying them from Freightliner on the cheap because they're buying so many of them.
Right.
And they're buying them at the end of the year, model year, so they're getting a better discount on them as well.
Yeah.
Now, this is, you know, third-hand information, but it actually makes sense when you think about it that way.
No, it absolutely does. I mean, that's kind of what I said they were going to do in the first place. They have to. It's the only – it's kind of fits their mold. Here's the interesting thing about all the and I learned this. Thanks for calling in. I'm going to drop the call because of the feedback. But
yes, sir.
But here's – you too. Here's an interesting thing about the Amazon system. And I think I covered it a little bit yesterday, or I covered it this morning or something. But these legacy delivery service providers, so these companies that are all laying off all their employees, they don't own the vans. They were leasing them from Amazon. The office or the where, like, so they had operations managers, they had terminal managers, but all the direct employees, like, that were handling the warehousing and stuff like that, all the warehouses were owned by Amazon. Amazon knew they were doing this. You know, all the vehicles are leased directly through Amazon. So now they're just pulling it. You know, they're just pulling these vehicles back, and then they're going to the drivers and saying, hey, come work for this guy. That's what they're calling 2.0 DSP. Which is the franchise program. They're kind of being smart about it. Like, I can't fault them from a business standpoint. I just fault them for laying off 7,100 people. But it's interesting. You know, when you think about how they did it and what they're doing, is they're pulling it back from everybody. They already tested the model by using all the data and all the information that they pulled in from all these legacy DSPs running around. The people that are going to lose money are the legacy DSP owners and the executives and investors. Those are the people. But all these trucks and equipment, that the DSPs that are all laying all these people off, they don't own them. I talked to one company that's got, giving a wide range because they don't want to give away who it is, but they have between 200 and 700 vehicles that they're actively using for delivery. Of those vehicles, they own about 10. So that tells you they're just leasing the vehicles. I asked him what the plan is, and he's like, Amazon's just going to pick them up, or we're going to just leave them at the warehouse. And Amazon takes them because Amazon owns them. The only things that they own, I guess, are the employees and then the little, like, tablet data things, you know, that are each like $600 a whack. So you're talking about a company that lays off 600, 700 people. That's money they're not going to be able to recoup. But, I mean, it's better than companies like Celadon who are going out and are just fighting to be able to auction off their equipment. It's kind of crazy. But let me see. And then the first section. Yeah, with the insurance, it's pretty interesting to look at. Like, I broke a story, but nobody picked it up because nobody cares except the people that are affected. there's a company called Hallmark Insurance just pulled out of commercial insurance completely. They're no longer writing. And the thing about them is they're the fifth largest insurance producer in the state of Texas. Not a single other freight media outlet picked up that story. And it was confirmed by the high ups there. There's memos and everything everyone could find. But they pulled them. They just said, okay, we're not renewing. We're not running any future quotes. You know why? Because their loss ratio was like 100%. So they were losing more money than they were actually generating. I can't blame them either for doing it. The insurance is like, you know, a bank, essentially. They invest the money that you're paying for your premiums. And if you have losses or there's other losses, then they no longer have as much money to invest. Therefore, they don't make as any money. And so that's why they're pulling out. Progressive in Texas, again, made an $800 a month premium or $800 a year premium increase for the entire state, because sources tell us that they're running at 140% loss ratio. And you wonder why insurance rates are high, and you wonder because everybody is crashing trucks or crashing into trucks. It's not just bad drivers. People also know, with all these stupid nuclear verdicts and all these people getting paid a tremendous amount of money for very minor accidents, and they're going out and they're getting rich off of it. I mean, there was just another one. I couldn't find any actual data on it because it was like a arbitration settlement. A guy was tarping his truck, He was tarping his load on his truck and he fell and he broke his leg. Do you know how much this truck driver got for falling off a truck when he was tarping a load? This was through arbitration. It just came out January 31st. I just can't find the actual filing to write the article on. This dude got like $9 million. That's so stupid. It doesn't make any sense. You're tarping a load. You fall, you break your leg. So what is the first thing you think about doing? I'm going to sue the company that made me go up and do that. Reasons like that, workers' comp is high. It's reasons like drivers getting involved and getting behind the wheel that don't know what they're doing. You know, one of the reasons why I no longer drive is because I was in a massive pileup. People died. I didn't like it ruined driving for me a little bit. You know, I still like driving. I loved when I worked for Freight Waves. I used to love driving up to Chattanooga and then driving back every single week. You know, it was fun. It was fun to be on the road. Hell, I got a CB in my car because I'm a dork. You know, I love it, you know, but not in snow. That's not my thing. I don't like driving in snow anymore. All right, let's read some of these comments, see if anyone else calls in. Roman said, if you have money, this is a good time to buy a truck and trailer. Equipment values are down by 25-30%. Yeah, but the Class 8 trucks are starting to go back up. So because more people are going to start buying trucks, the rates are going to come back. Rates are going to start being okay because they're not even that bad now. They're low. I get it. You guys are all like, oh, my God, this is a typical broker.
I'm going to take all your money.
Because that's what you think brokers sound like all the time. I know. In your head, every time you call a broker, you're like,
hey, yeah, you're calling about a load?
Because you think brokers are just evil through and through. We're not. Not all of us. Some of us. Some brokers are. But I was waiting to do that for a while. All right. Let me see. Roman Britska said, if you have money, this is a great time to buy a truck or trailer. Yeah, I already read that. Tony Hernandez said, is anyone having a hard time getting a customer? Ask me how I can help. I don't know. Tell him. Oh, geez. I don't know what that is. Wayne Campbell, the mighty Wayne Campbell from the driver's side, said, in-house schooling is what is actually talking about already in place, old news. I have no idea what the hell that statement meant. Maybe you could try to clarify that because that wasn't in English. Wayne Campbell again said they should have done their homework. That they have been wide open on what they're doing. Yeah, they have. And that's the thing. I talked to several companies that have yet to announce their layoffs. And they all said they knew it was coming. Since December of 2018, there was a big meeting with all the DSPs. So they all flew out to Washington State. They all met. They all had this. They all had the talk. Except nobody knew it was coming this suddenly. You know, one of the people that I was talking to had opportunities to go branch out and do other things. And he said, no, I'm going to stick it through. But the problem is a lot of these companies were FedEx contracts or had active courier businesses or accounts or things like that. They were much smaller. Amazon lured them in, said, hey, listen, we'll float the van. You lease it from us. So, you know, we'll handle your payroll. We'll do this. You buy our insurance products. You do all this stuff because Amazon's just collecting all the data. Then they realize which lanes are profitable. And then they go to these guys, which they suckered in by offering a lot of money and decent pay on it. Now it's time, just like Uber with lowering their accessorial rates, Uber, you suck. They're doing the same thing. You know, they're now coming in and saying, hey, listen, we can get all these 2.0 guys and guarantee that they're going to make like all the news articles are saying they can get $300,000 per truck with a $10,000 investment. Go to the Amazon like DSP groups on Facebook like I did. These guys are saying they're averaging $20 profit per day per truck. That's with them doing the operation stuff. If they hire someone to operations, they're not making anything. So $20 per day per truck. And you wonder why they're capped at $40 or 40 trucks. Because Amazon sees what happens when a company captures a market share. Look at these companies. You know, what was it? Black Dog or Black Road or whatever. I forgot what the hell it was. The article I wrote yesterday. Where's my notepad? So, where is it? RCX Logistics had locations in 4 or 5 separate states. Bear Down Logistics, that's the one. They were in 8 states. And they've only announced layoffs in 5 of those 8 states. The other ones still haven't been announced. You know, Express Parcel Services was in 5 states. Delivery Force was in like 4 states. Express Pack Services looks like they're in 1. Greenwich Logistics was in several. So was Pinnacle. So are the other companies that I'm talking to. They're in anywhere between 5 and 10 states. So it's, I mean, they did. These companies grabbed all the market share because they realized, hey, they were getting paid a premium to do the job. And then Amazon came in and said, hey, yeah, we know we are paying you a premium. What we didn't tell you is that we're just going to replace you with a cheaper alternative. And I don't like it. I just think it's brilliant from a business standpoint. I can't fault them on that. But on a personal level and on a standpoint of being someone who cares about the industry and cares about people getting laid off and all that stuff, it was a shady thing to do, if you ask me. But who am I? I'm just some guy that makes videos in my living room, right? All right, let's see what some of these other comments. Roman Britschka said, driving on the ELD is not pleasant. ELD rules are way too stringent. For example, how are you making public safer by setting a 5-mile-an-hour speed limit? It's not necessary. It just creates frustrated drivers. And I can attest to that. It does. It's a pointless thing. It doesn't make any sense. Do I think ELDs benefit? Yeah, because, again, I'm a big believer in making things easier to do. Do I think logs are a lot easier with an ELD? Absolutely. They're way easier to do because they do it for you. I hated doing logs. I got foreman manner violations when I thought I was on point. Actually, it was because I had a crappy DOT officer and I didn't put a zip code or a city and state, so they gave me a foreman manner violation. But, I mean, that stuff will happen. I've also been caught running without ELDs or without without logs or running multiple sets of logs. Everybody does it. All you truckers that actually drive. I know there's a lot of people out here that make these videos and stuff that just don't really have a lot of experience. And I think that's what separates me from some of the other brokers and people out there, is because I have the time behind the wheel. I have the time in the truck. I understand what it's like. And I actually like that side. I just make more money as a broker. So I do what I make more money at. You know what I don't make money at? Making these videos. So I'm trying. But what you guys can do, if you go to my Facebook page, Freight Broker Live on Facebook, I've got these sick mugs that actually have this logo on them, which you can't really see. Where the hell's the camera? Whatever. But they have this logo on them. You could buy the mug. They're like $20, including shipping. And I make like $5 a mug after shipping costs. And it just helps me to do it. These sweatshirts, I got a buddy that actually has a screen printing business. So I'm selling the sweatshirts, I'm selling the t-shirts, I'm selling all that stuff. Those just aren't up there yet. So in some other news, while I'm waiting for some more comments or someone to call in or whatever, I will be at Matt's this year. My press credential was approved, so I will be an official member of the press at Matt's. That's pretty exciting, right? So I'm excited about that. So I'm not going to be there on Saturday. If I am, I'll just like pop my head in and then I'll probably leave, because I'm probably going to drive up. Like I said, I like driving. So I'll be there Thursday and Friday and then start driving back on Saturday. But yeah, that's it. Let me see. Let me play a commercial real quick. And
oh my God, who the hell cares?
That's not a commercial. I was going to use that for when someone calls in and just complains about something, but no one's calling in. So whatever. Let me play this commercial real quick and get water.
I'm simply the best, better than all the rest. Yeah, better than anyone. I'm the best.
What's a singing goat have to do with factoring? Nothing. OTR Capital, better than the rest.
I love that one. That commercial is so good. All right. RD Trucking on YouTube, I saw you ask this earlier too. You said, how do I get in touch with my brokerage? You could send me an email if you really care. I don't put it up here because there's so many negative people. So I kind of keep my brokerage operation completely separate from the Freight Broker Live brand. But yeah. It is what it is. We're super slow. So we have We have a lot of the same bid freight a lot of the other brokers do. And then my direct customer stuff, they're just not really shipping until the end of March, early April is when they start picking up again. And at that point, we'll put it out. But yeah, you could just send me an email. It's scrolling below. Let me see what some of these other comments are. Call-in line's active, by the way. 914-803-4008. You're welcome to call in. I'll talk about whatever you want. You want to talk about being a broker. You want to ask a question, and you're just not afraid. I don't see your name or anything like that. So don't be all afraid. Call in. I pay for this phone system, so call. Jennifer Lopko Pash on YouTube said, or on Facebook rather, said, your thoughts on non-competes and being under one at a new company. There's not a lot that we can actually say. Depending on what state, unless you're in California, the non-compete could hold. I don't really know. I don't have a lot of experience with one. I think it would, and I take that back actually, because I tried to, look at non-competes a little bit more because someone asked me to last week. And so I started looking at the legalities of them. And I think back 10 or 15 years ago, it was a little bit easier to get out when you didn't, you know, if you signed a non-compete and say you can't work in the business for a year or two and that's all you've done. Like for me, example, is say I didn't do any of this writing crap and I didn't make these videos and I was just continuously brokering. It would be hard for someone to validate a non-compete with me, and I would take it to court anyway because I, in my head, I think I'm an attorney, so I love the chance to go to court. Anyway, I'm doing federal jury duty in April. How's that? So there's going to be 2 weeks there where I'm not making videos or writing articles or anything. Keep that in mind in April because I just got summoned the other day. Super sweet. Let me see. So, but to answer your question, I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not going to give unsolicited or solicited legal advice. I don't know. Your best bet is to contact a lawyer if you're under a non-compete. Depending on who the non-compete is with, it kind of depends on whether or not. I've had success just asking people, just let me out of my non-compete. I'm not going after your customers. Because that's usually what it is. If you work for, here's another example though, if you say you work for a broker for 2 years and you had no brokerage experience prior to joining them and they have a non-compete for a year and you lose your job or whatever happens and you're out, then I get it. I agree with that. You know what I mean? Then you're bound by a non-compete because they don't want you to go out and you know, do all that. They don't want you to do that stuff. You know, it costs a lot of money to train people. If anybody knows that, I do. It costs a lot of money to train employees. And if you train an employee for 2 years and they come in and then they leave and they want to start their own brokerage and they're directly competing against you, yeah, it sucks. And it's something hard to get over. But that's it. I don't know. I think Chivo Vida is having a conversation with someone that I don't see because it looks like he's having a conversation and I only see his responses. So I don't know who you're talking to, but you're talking about you had a verbal agreement to pick up at 1 p.m. Raycon signed, said 10 p.m., calls me at 12:30, asks why I'm not there yet. It's a 3-hour drive to pick up. Yeah, I don't know what that means, buddy. I guess you're just going back and forth. David Quacklebaum, send me a message and I'll send it to you after the show. I don't have it off the top of my head. I do know her email because it's easy. It's bsmith@insunlimited.com. Kayla Brow on YouTube said, any recommendations to obtain new direct customers as a broker besides the basic of email and cold call? No, I mean, and I've done this before and I could do it again just to show you guys, cause how easy it is to find. So if I go here and I go, shipper list, I've done this a lot. And then here is a shipper list, Interstate Certified Shellfish Shippers List. Interstate Milk Shippers List. List of shippers. They're just everywhere. Load Pilot. Don't buy any load lists, though. Those are all crap. But they literally have them. You can just look and find them. And then you just call and beat up the phones. That's how you can get customers very easy. You can use different apps, different different software. I used to use something. It was called, it was a Salesforce product, data.com or something like that. It was one of the things that I used to pre-qual my customers. So, for example, say I was reading a magazine. Let's just grab a magazine that's on my desk. So I've got an Inbound Logistics, as you can see. It's a magazine that everybody that cares about logistics should be reading. And hell, it's free. I don't pay for this magazine. They send it to me all the time because I'm an executive in my company. You guys, all you independent truckers, are all executives. So go go sign up to get your free magazine. Anyway, let me just, I mean, this isn't really the best magazine to look, but you could do it off of anything. You could do it off of a Mountain Dew bottle and say, oh, who is it distributed by? This bottle is under PepsiCo, Purchase New York. Well, I don't know. I think this, because it comes in a lot of the time they'll say it's distributed by or something like that. Let me see. Now I'm curious. Now I'm looking at every single thing to see if I can find it. Nashville. So you could find addresses for every single business. And this is the way I run sales and I do things. So I find the company name. I find the company that I want to look for. Now let's just say I'm looking at I'm not going to do that on my screen. There's just a bunch of different ways. Best way to get, here's a question. Best way to get direct customers, go to direct customers on the phone or go person to person, go for small companies or big. It depends what kind of volume you could do. If you're part of a big company, you can handle a big volume. If you're part of, you know, if it's just you, then go for the smaller companies. The ideal customer, like I said, is that guy that ships maybe 4 or 5 shipments a month and that's a minimum. You don't want to deal with anyone that's shipping 1-off, 2-off shipments because it just takes too much time. They're usually the sticklers that are shopping out loads all the time. But if that gold customer in my book is the guy that's shipping, you know, at minimum 4 to 5 times per month. And the reason I say that is because remember yesterday I talked about the 3 different types of customers. That is typically the third type of customer. It's a customer we all love because they don't necessarily realize they have enough volume, or they may not in that case, to dictate getting decent rates. A lot of the times it's all spot market stuff as a broker or as a carrier, because you guys are able to, you know, go and get customers if you really apply yourself. You have the ability to set the rate essentially because they don't know what the rate is. You know, the bigger customers, the mega customers that are shipping 500, 600, 700 loads a week, those guys all know rates. They have full-time logistics, you know, analysts that are sitting there, and rate analysts, and that are analyzing every rate. They're doing what Amazon is doing with their DSP providers. And they're saying, oh, where can we save money on this lane? Because the goal is to make money, you know? And then you have the second customer who kind of thinks they have a ballpark, but doesn't actually know a rate. So they're kind of guessing. So it depends, you know, in terms of the companies that I prefer. I have one big customer that ships a lot. And then I have everyone else is the smaller, the 5, 6, between 5 and like 15 shipments a month. Those are the customers I like because I can end up making more profit. On the volume side of things, I go for the big customers. And it's like I had a meeting with one of my agents this morning, and I was telling him, I'm like, listen, just post the rates. I know they're cheap rates. I know everyone else is working on it. Post the rates. It'll eliminate all these BS phone calls that we get from carriers that are like, hey, can you pay me more? And you're like, no, because a lot of times they think you can. And then you hear them go, wah. But I love these buttons. They're fun. I don't use them enough. I should use them more. But that's the deal with that, you know. In terms of, I've very rarely have I ever walked into a business and left without a customer. But that could be attributed to the fact that I don't really walk in green to places. I want to know as much as I can. Usually I've already talked to them on the phone. They know I'm coming. That's what I try to do when I'm doing outbound sales. Except when I was doing LTL sales. When I did LTL sales, now I just walk in with a Tava and be like, oh yeah, you think your rate could beat me? Well,
I am the almighty broker.
And I could beat any rate that you have. and I would, and I'd just adjust my margin until I could beat their rate, and then I'd get the business, and then I'd look back every single month and I'd just up their margin just a tiny little bit until I started making more money. But the problem with that is that's partial stuff. It's not full truckload. Those customers were not full truckload customers. So doing the full truckload stuff, yeah, is it the best way? I had an agent. And matter of fact, I don't know what the hell happened to him. That could be my operations guy. I have no idea. But I had an agent one time that before he was still in training with me. And before he even finished training, he's going to all these conventions and he's talking to these big shippers and trying to get in the door and do all that stuff, you know, and he was literally doing it, sending me pictures of him sitting in this in a convention that he was invited to by a shipper. It's insane. You know, some people have it, some people don't. RD Trucking on YouTube said, who do I want to talk to when I go to a business? Always someone in logistics. You guys that are trucking, you have an in already. And a lot of it goes into a lot of the excuses that has to do with back solicitation. You can't go after your customers. No, you can't. But how many of you guys every single week go to a location that has other businesses like shared loading docks? Because I can guarantee you're probably doing it once a week. At that time, you get a stack of business cards and you just walk in and you say, hey, man, I'm a driver. I come here every 2 weeks. If you ever have any outbound loads, here's my card. Just give me a call. You could do that. I used to, because I did a kind of specialized freight consolidation. So I used to use bills of lading. I'd issue my own bills of lading. We'd still have the customer's bill of lading signed, but we operated like an LTL carrier. So we'd have our own bills of lading signed. That is what we gave a copy to the customer of. So it had my logo, it had my company name and all that stuff right on it. So I got calls that way too. You know, and most brokers are not really that bad, you know. So if you do, you know, back solicit a client or a client back solicits you and you call and they call you and ask to do it, you can oftentimes call that broker and just clear it with them and they're going to be fine with it. Or if not, you're going to say, hey, listen, he called. I didn't realize who it was. I gave him a rate of $1,800. If you want to handle it, you're going to have to upsell him from that. And that's it. Because it technically you didn't back solicit the guy, he called you. It's not that you back solicited him. And that was kind of my gimmick. And that happened to me quite a few times in Jersey. And like I said, and most of the time when I call the broker was like, all right, well, no problem. Just try to clear loads through me in the future. You can go ahead and do that one directly. Or, and then one time it was a big broker, Nolan, I believe, who their customer called me out of the blue and said, hey, can you do this load? And I said, do you know who we did it? And they're like, yeah, you did it through Nolan. I said, I'll give you a quote, but I'm really close to them, so I'm going to give them a call and just get the okay. They're like, okay. Called Nolan. Nolan was like, sure, do you care if we just run it through us? And I said, absolutely not. It's a big customer for you. I don't care. So they ended up charging like $20 profit on the load and gave it to me for what I asked for. It's just called, you know, you guys have to treat brokers like your customers as well. I know a lot of you hate brokers because
we're all evil,
but not really, you know. That's like saying all carriers sound like that, but they don't. So it is whatever. I love those buttons so much. I'm going to have so many more. This one's a good one.
Oh my God. Who the hell cares?
I wanted to use that so bad when someone called in, except nobody's really calling in. So it is what it is. We still have a lot of viewers, so it's good. We have 30 on Facebook, 36 on Facebook, 38 on YouTube. So it's pretty good. Plus, you know, more on the other platforms, Twitch and the other. Plus it streams on my website and I don't get any of that visibility, but. All right. So Cliff said, why do a lot of brokers not post the rate of the load on some of these load boards? I don't know, because me personally, I post the loads because it makes covering the load a lot easier. Because, for example, if I have a load that I have, maybe I underbid it. Maybe the customer has sent me a rate of $1,000 and I'm like, you know what? I'm bored. Let me see if I can find some carrier to pull it for $1,000. If when I post that rate, typically that rate is firm or it's a ballpark rate that I want to get or I want to be close. And I use it as kind of a caution that if I have a rate posted for $1,000, don't call me and say, yeah, I could do that load, but I need $2,000, you know, because clearly I'm not going to be able to do it. It could also be used as a sales side of things with that same mindset. I post a load. Maybe I have $2,000 in it, but I post it for $1,000, not because I actually need to make $1,000, but because I want to see if I can. And usually you can't. So, you know, but I don't know. I've always been posting my rates just because it allows me to book freight quite a bit quicker.
you know, and like I said, volume. So I don't make huge, hell, I'm lucky if I make 10%. Typically, my profit margin's right around four, between four and six. Right now, they're around six, but usually they're four. you know, Matt Love said he better not call in. He might get the Peter Griffin recording. I know. I'm going to have more. I'm going to have a whole button, like a whole nother, especially if all you guys from YouTube keep calling in and doing it. Yesterday was a good show, and today is a pretty good show. I'm on a tear. So I don't mind having people call as long as you guys are kind of respectful, because it does go. I do get some professional people that don't want to hear all the cursing and the stupid stuff back and forth. But in terms of Cliff, to give you a better answer, I don't know. I don't know why some brokers do it and some don't. I like to post a rate because it makes it a lot easier. I think all brokers should post a rate, whether it's a target or not. You know why? Because every back end system, especially all those mega brokers and all those people that are using a system, they have a target rate built into their system. Mine does. So the system I use every day has a target rate system built in. So I could post a load and have the target rate posted on every single load automatically, you know. And even some of my agents prefer not to, because they like dealing with the old-fashioned negotiation over the phone. I don't fault them on it, and I don't tell them what they do. But I say, listen, if you want to cover more loads and get more phone calls, post the rates. Because one, it sets you apart from everybody else that's working on the same loads, because that does happen. And secondly, because they're posting rates lower. And again, that's a volume mentality. I'll post the rates a customer sends because I'll upcharge the customer $5. I don't care. You know, my goal is set a goal, try to make 200, 300 bucks a day per agent, per me, whatever, and be content with that. If I make more, great. If I make less, then the next day I have to go and work even harder to, you know, make more than I made the previous day. That's kind of the way that I book freight. You know, but I may get into the insurance business now, because, you know, I've been talking to some insurance people and they make a lot of money, especially now with those insurance premiums being crazy. Not really. Matt Love said it's called setting the anchor when you post a number first. Yeah, usually, because you have a ballpark price that you know that they're going to base it off of. Now, do you still have carriers that call in and say, oh, can I can do that load for $2,000. And you're like, well, I can't. So, and they're like, well, what's your top dollar? I love it when, because I have some customers where I'm like, yeah, it's a load that's picking up from Dallas. It's going to Chicago. It picks up today, 8 to 4. Deliveries Monday through Friday, 8 to 4. You got to call 2 hours before you pick up and deliver. And we're paying $800. That rate is firm. And they're like, well,
can you do $1,200?
And then I'm like, no, the rate is firm. Don't you understand that? You know, but a lot of people use that. A lot of people say the same thing or say,
that's all I have in it.
But they actually have quite a bit more money. So I don't fault the carrier for trying to get more money. Every single carrier, if I have carriers that call me and say, and I say I could do it for $850, and they're like, you know, okay, I'll take the load. I'm going to be like, wait, what? You didn't even try to negotiate, even though I'm not going to negotiate. But if you don't even try to negotiate, I'm going to say, listen, this is probably one of those carriers that's just going to fall off my load later when they find a better one. Because that happens a lot with my freight too. So here's the thing, because everyone keeps asking, because of my mentality and the way I do it and the way that I service the carrier, the loads that I move are not like awesome loads. they're the cheaper loads. The reason why I do so much is because I make a very low margin. I still have to work to sell the load because they're not great. They're all partials for the most part, because that's what I do. And I'll move, you know, on a slow day during season, I'll move like 20 on a busy day. The most I ever moved in one day was 76 myself, but the system's already, everything's in there. So I literally just enter a PO and that's it. So I can book them pretty quick. It makes a pain in the ass for tracking, though. Yesterday, people were talking about MacroPoint. I heard someone talking about MacroPoint on one of the shows that I was watching. I don't remember which one. And I'm curious what you guys think about some of these tracking apps. Now, I know there's app overload and stuff like that, and there's an app for everything. Hell, I was thinking about making an app for my website so people could access it from their cell phones and all that stuff. And then I was like, why? There's too much. Oh, let's see if we get an update. All right. So I have an update from the Oklahoma City Police Department. So let me Let me see this. So, yeah. I guess he's... I don't know who the hell he's CC'd on this thing. Anyway, so according to Sergeant Brad Gilmore of the Oklahoma City Police Department, he does remember talking to me earlier in the week. He did speak to the detective this morning. There's still nothing to report or update. The case is still under investigation, so no names, etc., have been released. The driver is in good condition and is expected to survive. Since the investigation has not been completed, case has not been presented to the DA's office yet. And then he gave me the case number so I can do a FOIA request, because now I'm a journalist, so I'm going to do. He has attached a copy of the initial report that was provided to other news outlets. Well, you didn't give it to me. Oh, he sent me the case report, but they redacted all the information. Wait a second. Oh, yeah. Now there, from this is pretty interesting. I'll put this stuff up. This is pretty interesting. So here's some information. The guy was shot with. I don't know if I should even say that. But I have everything now. I've got what their specific. All right. Well, that doesn't make good contact, but I just received a copy of something. It's a redacted report, but it has information and it's got the incident and it's got what kind of gun and how old the people were, but no names. They're not giving names. It's pretty interesting. So I'll look through this after, because it doesn't make for good news. But the good news is, the driver is reportedly he's in good condition. So I got to read it. So the only thing it says is that the driver was shot with a Glock 40, so Glock 22, but 40 caliber, and says that he was shot, and it says other stuff. I got to read it, because I'm not going to do it on the air and then say other stuff. So and again, the reason why I'm going to do the FOIA request, and the reason, because I want to know this. I think it's something everyone wants to know, especially because of my background and having worked security and being an idiot and likes to fight and understands the art of fighting, I guess. I can't understand why someone that is working security and see, but it gave heights, and that's the thing that's kind of screwing me over there. So it gave heights, and maybe I understand a little bit why this may have happened based on the heights, but I'm gonna write a little bit more. So stay tuned. I'll have an article that'll come out later. It's just, I mean, it's sad. No matter which way you look at it, a guy was shot because he parked somewhere. Everything else, did he overreact? Yeah, probably. So did the security guard, apparently, for sitting outside and banging or, you know, honking his horn incessantly at 4:30 in the morning. I can tell you what, that security guard's lucky that I wasn't sitting in my truck sitting there, you know? It's just, it doesn't make any sense. You know, people get shot for such stupid things. It happens here. I live in Southern Florida, so that shit happens every day here. It's just annoying. But you know what? I'm a Florida concealed carry permit holder, so I'm allowed to carry in 35 separate states. So that probably wouldn't have happened to me anyway. But for one, I'm not a bonehead. I wouldn't have got out and tried to pick a fight with a little tiny security guard on a, you know, little man's complex. But that's, you know, that's neither here nor there. All right. Well, when I do the FOIA and I get the case, all that stuff that I get, I publish. So I'm not one of these other people that try to keep it all to myself. I don't give a shit. My goal is to provide as much information as I can. Yeah, if other news outlets link off of my stuff, just, you know, backlink it back. But I want other people to understand. That's why I broke this story, or that's why I broke the Amazon story. That's why I, you know, focus on that kind of content, because it's very important. It's stuff that no one would pick up. All these Amazon layoffs, no one would have picked that up. Hell, nobody did until I started mentioning how many complete companies were going under, because then it was just one. All the other freight media companies, they weren't even reporting it. And then they all rushed to put something out after, you know, it's just sad. You know, I want people to report on the things that I think are important in the industry. You know, companies closing. Yeah, is it important? I don't like to report on them anymore, to be completely honest, because I think we're almost glorifying it. Yeah, is it great for me personally because of advertising and to have all the views on my website? Sure. Sure, it's awesome. You know, it makes me more money in the long run because I can go to advertisers and say, hey, look, my website has a quarter million impressions this month. But when you think about who it's actually affecting and the people that are losing their jobs and reporting on it, and especially, you know, like the CWRV story, I broke that story about those trucking companies closing. The OmniTrax story, that was a good one. I got to give that one. I broke that story too when OmniTrax crashed back in November. Or when was it? October or November? I don't remember when. But when that crashed and 75,000 trucks all lost their ELDs in one day, I broke a lot of those stories. And I like doing it. That's kind of the thing. Because I'm not the guy that just sits back and then counts my money. I sit and I watch the analytics on my page. I could tell. I look at every single page that everybody goes to. I monitor it because I want to learn to be a good writer and learn to write about things that people care about. All right. Purs Mall on Facebook said brokers should be required to post more details on posted loads, pickup and delivery time, date, rate, the exact zip codes, not a zip code that is 100 miles away from pickup. How TQL does many times. That would eliminate a lot of time wasting BS phone calls. Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think it would make it a lot easier, but you know, the pickup dates are there, delivery dates. See, that's a lot of content because I could speak as a broker, as someone that's put in as much, especially on Truck Stop, because you could put all that information in there, delivery dates and times and all that. I've put that information there, and when a carrier calls in, they're not looking at it. They're just saying whatever the hell, you know, oh, yeah, you got this load from Dallas to Chicago. What is it? Well, it says it right there. It's a load of you. It's a load of you. Of your it's your ego. No, that's what you guys think brokers are moving all the time. Egos. Anyway, Richard Caldell on Facebook said, why aren't broker bonds directly related to how much debt brokers are carrying? When a broker goes under, carriers get shafted, splitting up the bond. That's a good question. That is a very good question. It would kind of make sense, right? If the broker does $200,000 a month in net receivables from shippers, then they should be required to carry $200,000 a month in insurance. It's like you guys cannot carry over, or you cannot load cargo that's over $100,000 in value unless you actually possess more than that for cargo insurance. So how come brokers don't have that same rule? I don't know. It's interesting. I've never even thought about it before, to be honest, but it's interesting. Now, could you do that? Like the mega brokers that are doing $1 billion a year, you know, that insurance policy would be outrageous, but those are the guys that aren't going out. Those aren't the guys that you need to be worried about. And to be honest, there's telling signs of when a broker is about to go out of business. All right. You know, it starts with slow pay or I like to say it starts first with attitude on the phone. Because if you call a broker, and you guys all know this, when you call a broker and he's just an arrogant jerk on the phone, I had other words for that, but I'm trying to keep it PC. But when you call him and he's just an arrogant, pompous jackass on the phone, you know, or you at least secretly hope that guy is going to go out of business sometime soon. And and hopefully he pays his carriers. But we have a caller, so let's check this guy out. What's up, buddy? You're on the air.
Hey, what's up, buddy? This is Thomas from Houston, brother.
Yeah, what's up, Tom?
Hey, I was calling in about that bond and the broker bond information you were saying.
Yeah.
A lot of these carriers, they need to be real careful about just because a broker has a bond, they don't mean nothing.
Right.
We was hauling for a broker out of Bryan coming back to Houston. This guy was pumping at least 10 to 15 loads a day of the pipe manufacturer in Bryan. He didn't pay nobody. And the cold part about it was people was going after the manufacturer because we know they had the money because, I mean, it's a big pipe manufacturer. And they say, no, we already paid the broker. We've been paid the broker. We paid him before he even started moving the freight. And then so everybody started going after his bond. His bond, people say, well, because it's a Texas-to-Texas load, we're not paying nothing.
Yeah, there's I've heard that a lot lately, to be honest. I remember Yeah, someone messaged me that a couple of months ago, and I was like, nah, I've never heard of that. And then I looked it up. No, it's true. The intrastate loads, the bond doesn't cover, which is crazy.
Yeah. And I'm like, how is that even legal?
I don't know. I don't know.
Houston, so I ain't got to go pay them because that's my hometown. Come on.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy when you really think about it. It's
at the end of the day, he end up paying because some people's coming after him. But still, though, I'm like, dude, this guy's probably financed his whole house on this one project.
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, people do that. You know, people can get, and you can get behind. Like, I can't always fall. Hey, thanks for calling. I'm going to end this and then I'll keep talking. But I get a lot of feedback for some reason when the calls are coming in. I don't know why. I watch the recording. You guys don't hear it. I just get it on my end. It's annoying. But yeah, there's a lot of that goes on, and I don't really understand. I understand messing with the flow in that as a business owner, and it can quickly catch up with you. For example, so say you have a carrier on 15-day terms, and your customer's on 10-day terms. So your customer pays you in 10 days, and then you have 5 days to remit payment to the carrier. Now, I understand using that money in lieu of profit or whatever to justify or to handle expenses and stuff like that should it occur, but you need to be able to pay your carrier on time. And I understand all too well how quickly you can get behind, or if you accept credit cards or stuff like that from customers, which I'll never ever do. I don't even want to accept. I've got a store online that I don't even really have active because I don't want to accept credit cards because I've received one chargeback that essentially shut my brokerage down. You know, I kept it open, but and now I'm just an agent, so I don't have to deal with that. And that was unlike the trucking where I was just growing too big. I got someone essentially committed fraud. I moved freight for them and they charged back their card after they had the freight delivered because I took a credit card. You know, that you live and learn that kind of stuff. You know, that's why I don't own a brokerage because I just don't want to deal with it. For me as an agent, it makes sense for me to give up a percentage of my profits to the house, to the company I'm an agent for, because I don't need to deal with the accounting side. My accounting side is basically about 5 o'clock on Wednesday mornings today. 5 o'clock on Wednesday mornings, I get up and I do my commission splits out and I send everyone their money for my agents and stuff like that. And then I sit back and I say, whoa, made $180 this week. That's great. But the whole broker bond has always been a joke, and it is, Kevin Neiman said on YouTube. I agree. I mean, it doesn't really provide carriers protection, but the only thing it does, because whoever, I forgot what the guy's name is that just called in, like he said, if the customer goes out, you go out. There's nothing you could do, you know, or if the broker just goes out and says, I'm done. The only company that has any recourse to try to get anything back from him is the bonding company, to be honest, because when he signed up for his bond, he signed a PG on it saying that they can come after him personally. Because any of you guys that are out there that are owed by a broker, your obligation is to the broker, or the obligation of that broker is to you, but it's a corporation to corporation. So you can't go after the guy personally, which is, it's kind of BS. You know what I mean? But that's the thing about bonding companies is they will, you know, even though the bond's only $75,000. So if they owe $150,000, they're going to settle all those invoices for 50 cents on the dollar. Or sometimes less, depending on what the circumstances are. But it's sad. And to be honest, it takes 90 days for them to even pay it out anyway, because the bond has to be deactivated, and then they do a claim, a claim time. So they receive all claims during a certain time. So it's stupid. I agree with you guys. The whole broker system, the bonding system, it does not favor the carrier at all. And it's just one of those things that causes distrust between carriers and brokers, to be honest, because there's no protection really, you know, for a carrier. And most of the factoring companies, unless you're using an awesome factoring company like OTR, most of the factoring companies are all on some, recourse program. So if the customer doesn't pay or the broker doesn't pay, they're going to end up pulling that money back from you anyway. And usually when they do it, they just pull it from an invoice. They're like, oh, so-and-so's broker didn't pay you. So you just factored an invoice for $6,000. That invoice that you factored before was $5,000. So we're just going to pull that $5,000 all at once. Sometimes they'll work with you if they're good, but there's not many good factoring companies out there anymore, unless you're using OTR Capital, who is the highest referred factoring company. Well, the only referred factoring company for Freightbroker Live fans, because it's the only one I refer. It's the only one I trust. And put my name behind. And eventually they'll just, like, you know, pay me to wear OTR gear every single day because I rep them incessantly. Because they're a good company. That's what I do. I believe in good companies, you know, and just like the GOAT commercial, which I'll play here. Check this out.
I'm simply the best, better than all the rest. Yeah.
What's a singing goat have to do with factoring? Nothing. OTR Capital. Better than the rest.
I really love that commercial. I've been watching that for a long time. Or I made it, and then I've watched it, you know, twice in every video now for a month and a half. I still think it's one of the funniest things I've done. The one that I had before, but it got, you know, flagged on YouTube because I had Whitney Houston, like, actually singing the song. That was pretty good too. That was funny. But yeah. All right. So I don't think we have very many other questions. So I'm just going to wrap this up. It is leg day at the gym, even though I'm not excited about doing legs, but, it's been good. I like these Q&As. Tomorrow I'm going to go back to my regular show though. So I'm going to, you know, talk about targeted stuff. I still am opinionated. I still have the phone lines open. So they kind of run the same, but I focus more on like a targeted topic for the day. I am going to try to get Anthony from OTR. He's a buddy of mine that works there. He's a VP of sales for their Denver office. I'm going to try to get him on either this week or early next week. And I'll probably try to have Brittany on again. And then they'll be able to answer industry specific questions to either factoring on Anthony's side or insurance on Brittany's side. Because she came on last week, I think, and it was a very good show. So if we open it up to calls when those people are here, it should be pretty interesting. But yeah, make sure if you're watching this on YouTube, like, subscribe, do whatever you guys do on YouTube. I don't know what the hell you guys do. Like it, subscribe if you're just watching for the first time. If you're watching this on Facebook, make sure you like and subscribe as well. If you guys want to buy a mug, like I said, it's a 15-ounce mug. It's black and it's got this logo on it, which is super duper awesome. And my buddy Hype made it with Shoefly Graphics, but it's got that logo on it. You can scroll down somewhere on the Facebook page, Freight Broker Live, and you should see a link. And or to send me an email down below with your address and everything, I'll send you a way for you to pay the $20, and then we'll get going. These sweatshirts, I did get an email from my buddy. These sweatshirts are super heavy duty sweatshirts. It's actually a little heavy for me. I got to get a thinner one. But they're super heavy duty. So these ones are $55 each. And then, regular t-shirts, I think, are like $25. But again, I wear like a 3XL for every single thing, 'cause I'm a big dude. And, so I think it's like an extra $5 for XXL and XXXL. I don't remember, whatever. Just send me an email. If you want something, we'll figure it out. But all the proceeds from this just go directly to me and help me to keep making the videos and the content and writing articles and doing all that great stuff. With that said, thank you sincerely for watching and following, these videos and everything that I do, because it's just rewarding to me to see a lot of people, watch and like the stuff. But see you later.